This is the 4 o'clock panel. Thank you for coming, by the way. This is the 4 o'clock panel, evolving anarchy strategies and struggles against the police, Athens, Oakland, and Seattle.
Hey everyone, thank you guys for coming. Real quick, before we get started, I just want to mention one thing. There's two different groups, I guess, Indie Bay and
Aragorn
wants to record this panel, so just keep, for the panelists, keep that in mind, but unless anyone has any problem in the audience as well when we're asking questions. So this is a panel about the way anarchists participate and intervene in anti-police struggles. And obviously we have two comrades from Greece here, two from Oakland, and Patrick down in there from Seattle. So we're gonna go through this chronologically, basically. I came up with a list of questions to start the discussion, but I think we'll just go straight into this. All the panelists are talking about basically after there's been a mobilization or an insurrection or an uprising against the police in their respective cities. And, you can kind of trace in some ways, for anarchists in the Oakland Rebellion, they're somewhat inspired by what happened in Greece. And in the Seattle, most recent actions against the police in Seattle, those folks were also inspired by what happened in Oakland and, of course, what happened in Greece. So we're going to get into this. We have a bunch of panelists, obviously. We're going to try to leave some space at the end for questions. One other quick note is that Dimitris and Andonis from Occupied London are here on a tour around the U.S., and tomorrow they're going to be giving a specific talk about what's happening in Greece, the crisis and revolt and crisis in Greece. So that will be tomorrow at the Bastard Conference at 11:30. So that will be the full hour and a half, just about Greece. So if you want to come and check that out, please do. But anyways, I'm going to go ahead and hand it straight over to Dimitris to start off. And yeah, here we go.
Hello, everybody. Thank you very much for being here. Very quickly, I'll talk briefly, 3 or 4 minutes, no more, about the Greece-specific issues which relate with police and social revolt there. And then I will pass it to Andonis to address some issues which are going to be the common ground for all the speakers here. If we want to talk about Greek police and the anti-police move, the anti-police actions in Greece, after the end of the dictatorship, this is 1974, we have to divide this period in three distinguished periods. The first one is between 1974 and 1981. This is a period where most of the cops are getting their positions to the police, thanks to nepotism, political corruption, and they are mostly identified politically with right-wing or extreme right-wing. 1981, for the first time, we have social democrats winning the elections and governing and governing for the first time. This actually meant...
It was fine.
Do I really need that?
Yeah.
All right. Shut up. 1981, the socialists win the elections, and for the first time, the same nepotistic and corrupted system extends and starts including supporters of the Social Democrat Party, PASOK, which is now governing Greece. This period lasts up to the end of 1980s, early 90s, when actually we have attempts to modernize the state apparatus and the economy in Greece. This, in fact, means the beginning of neoliberalism as we all know it. Since 1991, police itself start applying new techniques and start getting training from USA police, from British police, from other European countries, and this is the period when we start have very similar problems to the ones that the rest of these countries that Anglo-American world is facing at that time, at that same period as movement. This modernization meets its peak in 2004, 2003, 2002. This is the period before the Athens Olympic Games. That was a first-class opportunity for the state to train, to upgrade, to give high quality and high value to the counter-terrorist units. Of course, under the category of counter-terrorism was included a lot of the antagonist movement's actions. This goes on The Olympic Games at the same time, in combination with the neoliberalist policies, implied not only an increase to the oppression by the police, but also implied an increase into poverty. In other words, people, and particularly young people, had to live with much less money, work and pay much more than usually than before, and earn much less. At the same time, You could see the Greek cities, police units in full arm, stationed in the corners in full riot gear to they would stop people, stop and search operations constantly, particularly targeting younger people. The same younger people who actually were targeted from the economic system itself, and they were living actually at the same time they were poorer and more oppressed. The situation actually culminates in 2006-2007 when we have the students, the mass university students movement against the educational reformation in the country. One of the many during these last three decades, but a very important one, which was met with huge oppression from the side of the state. Now imagine economic crisis, although hit officially Greece just in 2009, is being building up since early 2000s, right? Then actually, let's say the final straw in the back of the camel comes in December of 2008 when a cop actually executed a 50-year-old student in the Exarchia neighborhood in downtown Athens. And this, I guess that the rest of it, most of the people in this room, know what happened in December 2008 and since then. I still pass this to Sadonis because we're running out of time. And here you go.
Okay, brilliant. Well, thanks, Tim, for putting together this panel, and thanks, Dimitris, for providing some really useful historical context.
If you want to introduce yourselves, going down here. Yeah.
Okay, well, my name is Adonis. I'm a member of the Occupied London Collective, and we're here in the station, sort of like Tim described earlier. What I wanted to do here today, very briefly, because, yeah, time seems to be the main issue in this panel, is to, first of all, say... I was thinking, no, I wasn't doing this the bad way.
Let's do it.
Okay, I'll just do it. I'll keep losing time by actually commenting on time. I was thinking this morning that a couple of years ago, to be more precise, before December's revolt, in all honesty, I wouldn't really have thought a panel like this that we're having today would make much sense. And I'm saying this, I need to explain this, is because, like as Dimitris explained a little bit, the situation in policing, in terms of policing and in terms of the role of the police in the Greek society, was quite unique, maybe, or maybe was quite different to the British and to the American context up until, but before December. In the sense that what Dimitris was saying, that the being a police in Greece was a very specific, very frowned upon kind of element, it was very separate, and so on and so forth. But what has happened from the moment after the revolt and the moment of the fight back, the repression of the revolt of the Greek state after December is very interesting and is bringing us in many ways, quite a few bad ways, much closer to the British and to the American model. So just as one example is two quite similar police forces. Some of you might be familiar with, again for a very bad reason, because I'm talking about the Delta Force and the Dias Force, which are both motorcycle police forces that have been operating in Greece pretty much since the exact aftermath of December's revolt. And the reason why I'm saying maybe some of you know them is because one of their victims is actually a very good American comrade and a good friend, Calamity, who was attacked by them at one of the demonstrations a few months ago. So their introduction was very explicitly and directly in response to December. The idea about having this police force was to make sure that no kind of like spontaneous mass action could take place in the city without control. So this is perhaps the most kind of like visible and tangible kind of like element of police repression that you can see. But there's so many other examples. I wish I had more time to go into them. But you have the anti-terrorist unit, which has been very, very active in the past few years, and the way in which it operates is pretty much exactly copying the British intelligence model, the way they collect information. You have a tear gas coming in from places like Israel, you have water cannons coming in, just about to come in from, I think it's Germany. You have even the idea of bringing an international police force to control the borders, actually this is already happening. So it's an incredible ground of repression, basically, on a very international level. You even have the idea of NATO. There was a bit of a small scandal when there was a video on the internet about like a military unit training to deal with urban unrest, basically. And instead of even defending themselves, the generals came out and said, what the hell do you expect? This is the reality from now on. This is what the NATO is here for. We have to deal with urban unrest, whether you like or not, whether the government like or not. We're now in control. So this is all a huge turn, and it's a turn that makes puts us in a position, it's a very unique position, where we have to, and we want to draw into the international experience to deal with what is an international kind of like level of repression. And at the same time, internally within the country, we think that the anarchists actually now have a very important and very key role to play. I mean, just wrap it up, in the sense that we had all this experience, and we might have not been, and we never wanted to be the experts in anti-police struggle. Because like I said, this was a sentiment that was running through the society as a whole. But we still have a decades-long experience of dealing with the police, and maybe a very key and very useful role that we'd have to play is to basically help out and aid other people and other social groups that are now turning against the police. We had a talk a couple of days at Station 40, and we did talk about one of these struggles, the Kerateha struggle in Attica, where this is exactly what's happening. People are picking up on the anarchist kind of organizing and the means of struggle. And this is definitely more of what we want to see, to help, to spread out, help out other groups within the country, but also this is why we're here, to learn from the international experience and to coordinate on a more global anti-police network, basically. So I hope we can work on that together.
Okay. I have no idea how to talk in a microphone. Not much of a public speaker. My name is Finn. I'm actually not from Oakland. I live in San Francisco, just to make that clear. I want to give props to the proletarian rebels that are in San Francisco as well. me and Matt both are here representing the Oakland 100 Support Committee. What we're known for doing is basically helping out people who were caught up in the riot. Some of them are rioters, some of them are not. But that's what we did. We did a lot of work around raising funds for people who are locked up. We did a lot of support work for families and lovers of people who their loved ones were in jail, some people over 6 months. This is also, mind you, we're talking specifically about the Oscar Grant riots in Oakland, in case that isn't clear. So I want to first talk about what the importance of it is to anarchists, at least to those of us who are in the O100 Support Committee, beyond some of the more like obvious things. We want to highlight the fact that we saw what happened in the streets and the participants in the streets as a fighting force that wasn't controllable by like bureaucratic organizations. And that's something that we see like pretty rarely in American society, and we're very excited to see that happen, to see people who are oppressed rising up against their oppressions. We also were very excited to see different types of people who normally do not interact in this society barely at all, and for all intents and purposes, maybe don't even get along, actually together, rebelling together. And we're really excited to see those commonalities come out. And so because we were inspired by these things, that was kind of the beginning of O100, which is mostly not all anarchists, but we got together kind of being like, what do we do with how excited we are? What needs to happen? At the time, like over 100 people had been arrested in January 2009. Some of us were some of the ones that were arrested. And it became really easy to just fall into doing legal support. So we did legal support. We joined a campaign to drop the charges. We did big rallies outside of the courthouse. But I think it's important to note that right off the bat, a lot of assumptions were made about anarchists. And I think everyone knows like what a lot of them were. But as far as O100, there's a lot of assumptions that we would be prioritizing giving support to anarchist comrades over Black and Latino youth. And so that, it kind of put us on a defensive note from the get-go, even though from the get-go, we were really excited about the potential of solidarities being built across these social lines through doing legal support. We feel like this fell into this kind of idea that's common, that sees the people who are rebelling more for the ways that they are victimized. Like the protester is like seen as completely black and that they are a victim because they are shot, they're a victim of their criminalization in the street. They must be protected from themselves and protected from the anarchists in their rioting. O100 kind of took more of a stance of the protesters, and yes, especially like the black and the poor and the young people, as an autonomous political force. They're like political actors, and they were acting in the street, and that we wanted to find a way to be able to like empower that action even further, and just figure out what kind of resources are needed in order for these things to happen, because it was the first time in California that we were able to see like a man put behind bars, even though that doesn't really necessarily fit in with our anarchist politics. That was a lot of power that was exercised by people that don't have a lot of it. So we're really excited to see that. So I'm gonna skip ahead really quick, but I really just wanna say that we, more than just like doing the regular, what you think of as legal support, we wanted to build a culture that rioters would be treated as legitimate political actors, and not people that necessarily need to be organized by like an outside force, but like know very well what they're doing, and we wanted to encourage that. And then also, one of the things that we came up against that I just wanna bring up really quick is kind of some of the things that we found within the like national anarchist movement of kind of, I think, unconscious thoughts of not necessarily seeing the people who are arrested as political prisoners, as people who are fighting political cases. And I just want to point that out, that like perhaps it is easier to like see black people as, oh, that sucks, black people go to jail, that's what black people do, they go to jail. And I feel like we're very quick that when we see people that look like us go to jail, we mobilize a lot quicker. We get money together a lot quicker. And I want to bring that up, not to like wave my finger at any of us, but more of, I think these rebellions are going to keep on happening. And I think we need to start seeing like everybody, if they look like us or not, as comrades and as people that are like coming up against the state and the police and capitalism, even if they do it differently than we would.
Okay. My name is Matt. I was also doing a lot of work with Over 100, and this might seem backwards, but I'm going to delve a little bit into the historical context of Oakland to sort of preface some of my, some of the broader lessons taken from what happened in the last 2 years. So I guess that starts out with a few central hurdles for anarchist organizing, and Finn touched on a little bit. But racial politics and the sort of fact that, you know, the history in anti-police struggles in America is very racial at its core. And then the other hurdle being dealing with not only the state and the media, but, you know, these bureaucratic institutions, nonprofits and things who are actually, you know, calling themselves progressive and all that, doing a lot of the bidding of the state at a number of moments. But so first I want to highlight, this moment in Oakland's history, which I'll start by saying that January 7th, the initial rebellion after Oscar Grant was murdered, there's this moment where there's a rally at the BART station, and there's all these city officials and sort of nonprofit, like, outside, I guess I would call them, because they're not, you know, part of this autonomous group that Finn talks about. People who are trying to control the crowd and giving this lip service of, we want justice too, you know, here's what we have to do, we have to organize and this and that, and this moment where people saw right through that and just said, no, fuck that, we have to go right now, like, y'all aren't doing anything. So it was very emotional, very powerful. But I bring that up because that is a moment in Oakland's history that, based on confrontation with police in the community and this correlation with just like a lot of young people in the streets, like, I don't know, like just unemployment rates being really high. These two factors were at play in the 60s and the early 60s when this moment happened as well, when people said, we need other tactics to address this, you know, this issue of repression, constant repression. And that was the birth of the Black Panther Party. And I say this just because, you know, where it goes from there is that people have, in Oakland, have this sort of collective memory of, okay, that was a group that said, okay, we need new tactics, and form these really organized, what the Panthers really promoted, you know, is this organized and disciplined and really controlled environment of resistance. And so, you know, seeing something different from that, first, that then resulted in, as we know, like this insane repression, everything from COINTELPRO to, you know, crack in the neighborhood, just like obliteration of Black communities and communities of color. So I want to point out that it's really important to look at some of the reactions of the folks in Oakland who were antagonistic towards anarchists and saying, oh my God, you guys, you know, this is going to bring down all this repression on, you know, these, you know, babies and grandmas and, you know, stuff in the street. I mean, we have to really, I feel like there's been a lot of discussion around the contradictions in violence and the way it's discussed. And I don't think I need to go on that much to this group, but just the fact that, 1 minute? Okay. Wrapping up. The fact that, again, there's this constant reinforcement by the state and through the media, and even progressive groups in Oakland that says that anarchist equals white equals dangerous equals privilege equals like violent. And so when we look at how to involve ourselves with a larger movement, there's a lot of pushback that we shouldn't give too much weight to, because we understand that, like, there is that moment when people who are oppressed see that they have to do something and they act. But that, I've sort of lost my wrap up. And I think I'm out of time. So I'm gonna.
There'll be enough time for some concluding comments.
Yeah, I'm gonna come back to that.
Hi, I'm Patrick. I live in Seattle, and I'm gonna be talking a little bit about a flurry of some really strong anti-police activity that happened in that city, mostly in the month of February. And I'm going to have to assume that people know some of what happened. Like, unfortunately, I only have a short amount of time to talk, so I can't talk about everything that did happen, but I want to emphasize some things about how anarchists played such a crucial role in the things that happened. And start by saying that the struggles that we've seen in Oakland and in Athens were a really strong inspiration and influence on anarchists in Seattle. Although the situation is totally different, and there weren't riots in Seattle, even if Glenn Beck says that there were. But at the same time, I think some of the lessons to be learned from Seattle are probably very applicable in other American cities as well, so they deserve to be shared, particularly because there wasn't a strong or clear articulation of anarchist space or movement, in my opinion, in Seattle preceding this flurry of activity, not for a long time, at least. So if you're not familiar with everything that happened, there's a couple of places I would suggest to go read. On the Puget Sound Anarchist site, pugetsound.org, there's a piece called Sleepless in Seattle, I'd recommend reading that. I think there's a piece, like a blow-by-blow in The New Fire to the Prisons. Maybe read that. And yeah, there's a lot of people from the Northwest here, so you all know what happened. But I'll try to make up some new things for you guys as well. So in Seattle, there has been this growing tension between civil society and the police force that is based around one police murder in particular, the murder of John T. Williams by the cop Ian Burke. It is a really well-publicized murder. It was really brutal. John T. Williams was a Native American living in Seattle who was approached from a cop by a cop from behind and shot 7 or 8 times in the back. He was deaf in one ear and never heard the cop's order to stop. The initial police report alleged that Williams had lunged at Burke with a knife, and initially the mainstream media had repeated this report very uncritically to justify the killing. And the initial anarchist response in Seattle was to hold some like counter-information style demonstrations, distributing leaflets explaining what actually happened. And that response was really fast. It was pretty small. But also, the anarchist analysis was to point out that the problem here isn't the issue of one cop or one murder. In fact, like looking into the situation in the Puget Sound region alone that week, 6 people were shot by cops and 5 of them killed. So at the same time, anarchists in Seattle and in Tacoma and Olympia and the Puget Sound in general were saying to ourselves, how do we deal with this situation? Like six police shootings in 1 week. Like, how do we deal with this? And we turned to using the assembly model as a way to talk about these things together and try to like flesh out a strategy for how to build some kind of anti-police response. But following the first assembly that we had, there wasn't really a lot of anarchist activity. In fact, like as anti-police discourse in Seattle was growing, the tension was growing, that discourse was being totally dominated by authoritarian groups and liberal groups, leftist groups. The city responded right away. So after about a month of like very low anarchist involvement, there was a second assembly where the analysis was presented that these mechanisms that were at work, like these leftist, liberal, and city forces, the media, were all forms of control that had jumped into motion to make sure that things didn't get out of hand in Seattle, that order would be maintained. But at the same time, anarchists had seen that because of the bad press that the police were getting, their hands were tied at demonstrations. Like, it really seemed to us like the time to act was immediate. That something had to be done right away. Like, now was the time for the anarchists to enter the discourse, and we needed to enter as a destabilizing force to counter the stabilizing forces of like the leftist and liberal groups. So at the second assembly, we devised like this rough strategy around the idea of entering the more reformist demonstrations and kind of commandeering them and taking them in a more confrontational direction, organizing our own demonstrations that were more anarchist in principle, and also confronting the police at the points where they were attempting to rebuild bridges to civil society. And to give some really quick examples of the ways that we did that, a rally that was organized by the Revolutionary Communist Party Front Group, October 22nd Coalition, was attended by like many anarchists dressed in black bloc and brought from the sidewalks into the streets. And what was meant to be like a purely symbolic demonstration was brought to the East Precinct on Capitol Hill, where a police cruiser was smashed up. And then when the police counterattacked, anarchists defended themselves using sticks and dispersed. I think that was really a shifting point in the discourse of anti-police activity in Seattle. And then, as far as organizing our own demonstrations, the day that the city announced it wouldn't be pursuing charges against Ian Burke, anarchists, we actually used Facebook because of what we had read about the way Facebook was being used in Egypt. It was kind of an experiment for us to like call for a demonstration to happen that night, the day of the day that Ian Burke got off, and it worked like remarkably well. I don't even know how many people came. It was at least 500, which is big for Seattle, but like some mainstream media reports said 1,000 people, but it was hard to tell because the mob of people actually sort of organically split into at least 3 different splinter marches that went all over the city and went on for like well past midnight. 2 days later, Ian Burke resigned, and we did the same thing again. We got so many people out into the street using Facebook, and this time, there is a huge Black Bloc presence for Seattle these days. Like, I remember just looking around and being like, I don't even know who all these anarchists are. I don't even know who all these kids with black flags are. And then finally, to put it really briefly, anarchists, among other groups, crashed the accountability forums that the media was trying to have to like present the police as like a force that can be reformed. So, jumping ahead, I want to say that for a while in Seattle, it seemed like the strategy was going really well, and it did go really well. It seemed like every week things were going to just keep happening and growing, like the intensity was going to grow and grow. Ultimately, what happened, like the police, their hands were tied. We were like correcting that analysis. They had a really hard time cracking down on us because they were so afraid of more bad press. And the force that really, like the recuperative force that really like unbound the hands of the police was the media. And they really started to like push on this issue of the violent anarchists in an attempt to like separate anarchist demonstrators from the rest of demonstrators. And I've only got 1 minute left, but I want to say that that media, the reformist groups, and the police basically conspired to close that window of activity in Seattle. Things are a lot quieter there now, but you can see that we began to articulate connections and to carve out an anarchist space that exists today. And like, even though the intensity and like the rapidity of the events isn't there anymore, we're still able to pull off things that we weren't able to before. And we're gonna be more ready the next time a moment of conflict is on us to strike. Time is up. Cool. The time is now.
So we have about 15 minutes left, and I want to make sure there's a little bit of time to open up for questions. I mean, it's been like a whirlwind, like 2 or 3, like many different places in the world where people are fighting the police. Just one other thing to mention, just to keep this on context, is that also in the past year, I mean, there's been shit going on in Oakland and Seattle, also in Portland. I'm sure some people know this, like there was, you know, smaller but still very significant like movement against the police about a year ago, and this past, I think at the end of the summer in Los Angeles, there was a rebellion against the police there following, was it the killing of someone there as well, I believe. So it's just a pattern we're seeing. That's why we think this is an important topic to bring up. If anyone has any specific concluding comments, I'll open it up to you guys. I also, Matt wants to jump in here. I'll do that, and then maybe I'll start off with a question. We can have a few quick questions. So
that's nothing, Matt.
Thanks. Okay. Really, I guess I just wanted to bring it back to my sort of like lessons learned critique stuff, and it sort of parallels what Patrick was saying about what happened in Seattle. I guess dealing for anarchists, I think there was this long moment where people were so on the defensive about being confronted with racial politics and the notions of violence and like the, you know, media and like sort of Hollywood notions of what anarchists do. And I just want to point out that it's important for us to not be sidelined by that and to step up. And there's this vacuum of organizing which made it such that there was this case ended up just following the court case and the judicial, like, you know, process trying to get justice. And that made it very reactionary, and that made this cycle of, okay, like, just wait till that happens and then go out on the street and see what happens. And I think that there needs to be a little bit, there needs to be, you know, anarchists calling, you know, our own marches like you're talking about, that aren't as reactionary. There's an example of the BART action in which there had been nothing for a long time, and then folks came out, shut down BART, and as a result, one of the officers who was there was, you know, also arrested. So it had this thing where at least people could identify and understand what, you know, why people were out and doing what they were doing. And then the other thing, so doing some more autonomous action, but also, you know, engaging with the folks who have these critiques or who sort of spew them out because that's what they're hearing. I think it's really important, and I think, you know, a number of anarchists stepped it up and engaged in some of these organizing spaces, which is really difficult because these were the people we're talking about who are, you know, promising these ideas of justice by writing letters or, like, having more permitted marches and shit. And so, but dialoguing with those folks and trying to, you know, we had a meeting where we brought in a lot of folks who were doing organizing just to talk about the ideas of diversity of tactics and our relationship to the cops, like all cops, and to the media. And I think it was a little too late. It happened like right before the final, you know, sentencing of the cop, but it was productive in that, you know, when that rally happened and that march happened, people were like on the same page, and there was a lot less of this like finger pointing afterwards. So lessons learned, and there will be more.
So I'm going to start off the questions just with a question directed at the Greek specifically, and before we take questions for the audience, and the question's basically, you know, when we look at the way the anti-police struggles are successfully, when there's a successful, you know, counterinsurgency campaign or repression campaign in the United States, we see that both there's the physical repression of movements, whether it's through people going to jail, whether it's people getting beat up on the street, harassed by police, but there's just as much, as both people from Oakland and Seattle have said, it's just as important, the recuperative elements within, whether it's the left or the NGOs or, you know, whatever, civil society that steps in to stabilize these rebellions and basically work with the state to put them down. And I just want to ask the two Greek comrades here, Dimitris and Adonis, you know, is there anything like parallel to that in Greece? Because you guys, Adonis in particular, went into the way that the Greek state has really militarized the police and modernized the police and stuff like that, and following the December Rebellion. And I'm just curious, is there any kind of, does the left or is there non-profits or anything like that in Greece?
Yes. Actually, historically, it's still the same until today. It's the Communist Party of Greece and the analogous to TUC, this is the Trade Unions Councils, the confederation of all the trade unions. The confederation of trade unions is controlled from the governing party, the Social Democrats, PASOK, and the Communist Party actually is not, some to underestimate, it's the third parliamentary power in Greece with about 10% of the vote, and has presence on the street, a presence which is even directly oppressive against the anarchists, attacking to them, helping even the police arresting anarchists, like back in 1998. An important thing to mention is that the Communist Party was against explicitly the December Rebellion, which followed the assassination of the 15-year-old student by a police officer, and was even congratulated by the government and the extreme right-wing Laos. Which is a party, the parliamentary extreme right wing, was congratulated for its attitude into pacifying, or if not pacifying, but actually not participating and condemning a revolt.
Yeah, exactly. And just to add to what Dimitri said, to add to the historical, what is historically the main agent of recuperation in the country, which is the Communist Party. After December, we've seen many who kind of like want to live up to the Communist Party's reputation, and to also play a role in this kind of like repression, unfortunately. So it is, like you said, the trade unions who've been very, very, very good actually in repressing and diffusing tension. and also parts of the left, who's taken so many, you know, you might all know about Alexis, who was killed because of a revolt that followed, but we don't know about so many other people who were killed by the police in Greece, because it doesn't seem like these organized kind of like structures want to take up these struggles. They're very, very careful and clever in like diffusing the situation. Or like I was explaining, all this militarization of a society, all this extremely authoritarian turn has been met by next to no resistance by the structural left and the organized kind of groups. So the answer, in short, the answer to your question, Tim, is yes, and not all police wear blue uniforms.
Cool. Okay, let's see some hands. We have about 10, 15 minutes. First hand right there, then right there, then right there. Go for it.
Okay, my question is about solidarity demonstrations and actions, and I guess for the three different geographic zones represented here, like in Greece, what is the relationship between solidarity actions in the countryside? Do they exist? Have they influenced things on the ground in Thessaloniki or Athens? And so my question for folks in the States is like what the impact has been from the various solidarity actions that have happened, if it's noticed, if it seems to help, if it seems to just build morale for the few folks who know about it, how do those things impact the anti-police movements in those
And you mean solidarity by people from other areas showing solidarity with specific struggles? Like how is that?
Okay. Throughout like a country or a region.
Okay, cool. I mean, also like there's many solidarity actions for the December Rebellion in Greece that happened here.
You know? Mm. I don't know if you guys
want to say. Do you want to talk from the other side better?
Whatever. Just go down. Yeah.
What?
Yeah. So. The question raises something that I didn't talk about really, which is that as well as like these street mobilizations that happened in Seattle, there were also like kind of covert attacks that happened. There was a police substation that was there was an arson attack against in Seattle, and there was also a similar thing happened in Olympia, and Olympia did but then there were attacks against different institutions, governmental or capitalist, in Vancouver, Tacoma, Santa Cruz, Philadelphia, Montreal. I could even be forgetting some. Portland, yeah. And I would say, like, just are those things encouraging? Like, do they keep us fighting? Like, when we're facing repression in Seattle? Absolutely. Like, without a doubt. So, thanks to everyone who did that. I guess that's it.
Alright.
I guess, well, actually, sort of flipped the question, because I remember, you know, it was only 2 or 3 weeks before what went off in Oakland that there was a solidarity demo, for Greece in San Francisco.
Right.
And I feel like that sort of just exercise, running around, seeing each other, you know, was actually really productive for what was to follow.
And I have to say, kind of more on solidarity actions that have happened here, is that there's been a few, and I kind of have this sense that if something is explicitly anarchist, that people are kind of freaked out to vote, maybe even especially anarchist. The Guatemalan man that was killed in LA, at the time, like another man was killed for having a spatula in Modesto. We had a demo in the Mission, very few people came. When Calamity was nearly killed by the Delta Force in Greece, we had a demonstration, and again, not many people came, and I think it was it says anarchist, I don't want to go to jail. That's like the most I'm going to think about it. So I don't know. I think let's get out there a little bit more.
During when there was the fundraiser that were happening for the prisoners, was going to the prisons and doing business with people who have been arrested and telling them there are all these events happening, people are coming out to support you, was I mean, it speaks for itself. It was really meaningful for people to hear the general support from the community and other places across the country as well.
Yeah. Cool. Go for it. Well, then we'll get one more question or two more.
Okay, cool. So very quickly, so we can allow time for more questions. Yeah, the solidarity question is a really important one. And to answer the question directly, yes, there were many solidarity actions across the smaller cities in the Greek December. There's 53 cities in total in Greece, and there was at least one demonstration in each of those cities. That's the only time in modern Greek history that has ever happened. But all these people, in exactly the same way, I think, inside the Greek borders, the reasons why they took the streets were exactly the same reasons why, very similar reasons to why people outside the Greek borders took to the streets versus the people like everyone over here. And this is not, I would like to believe, and I hope, not out of just a simple like paying respect or paying tribute to people's struggles in another country or another part of the world, but because you can resonate and relate to what's happening out of your own lived experience. So in the same way that people in the smaller Greek cities took to the streets because they themselves had lived in their skin police repression, I'm very happy to see that this is also the same story here. People are relating to very common, very similar struggles, and we're taking the streets for the same reason and in an equal kind of manner, not just copying each other, but because we feel the same kind of experiences and we're fighting the same struggle.
Yeah. Okay, I called on three people, and we're just going to have to go in that order for now. I'm sorry, unless someone wants to withdraw their hand. I forget who the next person was. Yeah.
This is a question for Seattle. I was wondering how the police accountability meetings were disrupted or organized against or anything by the anarchists.
Okay. So one of the accountability forms, the one that was, I guess, crushed the hardest was one that was organized by The Stranger, which is like Seattle's like alternative weekly paper. And it was just such total bullshit. Like, it was basically a PR opportunity for the cops. And anarchists came to it. There's basically, like, there's two strategies for disrupting it. One was to just distribute counter-information explaining the role that the media plays in backing up the police, and the media as, like, a kind of repressive force, the mainstream media. And to distribute those leaflets outside to everybody going inside, and have banners and chanting, but then also to later like enter the forum actually, which happened. Then people masked up and came in chanting "cops, pigs, murderers" and throwing leaflets and just making a scene. And the other strategy was for anarchists to just dress non-anarchist looking and go in like as people in the audience and just interrupt the cops every time that they tried to speak. And that went amazingly well, especially because so many other people came really pissed. Like, we can't say that the anarchists were the only group disrupting those proceedings at all, but I do think that those anarchists standing up and interrupting the cops really aggressively at the beginning of the proceedings, like, set a tone for the rest of the night, where people who came and were really angry and are like, well, maybe I'm going to speak my mind, were like, well, fuck, I don't have to listen to these pigs either.
Okay, there was a third hand that I called out, yeah.
I have a question to what you were just talking about. This idea of creating an anarchist space, this idea of anarchists as a sort of global subculture that turns up in different places and has a self-interest in promoting itself. I wonder if that isn't counterproductive in a certain sense when one looks at it as a matter of self-promotion. And whoever wants to take that on, I'll just give an example. I was at a year ago at the Sheikh Jarrah demonstration in Jerusalem. And the first thing I saw was a bunch of people that looked like they'd been beaten down from Berkeley. And I said, and most of them were Jewish, like me. The person I felt most in solidarity with was the guy across the street, a little Palestinian guy that could have been my grandfather selling arms.
Okay.
So I just wonder who we identify with and why.
Okay, Patrick, if you want to start with that, but basically, I guess we'll let people have real quick, like one minute,
and... Against the NGO types, absolutely right.
Okay, against the NGOs, but just in terms of anarchist identity.
Sure. Yeah. I think that earlier Adoni said something that I think is really good, which is that, like, I think as anarchists we shouldn't desire to be, like, the anti-police force. I think that anti-police struggle is a popular struggle, as in it's a broad struggle. And I think it resonates with so many different people. Like, a lot of anarchist critiques of the violence of everyday life can seem kind of abstract to people. Like, maybe people understand how work is violent. Maybe they don't understand, like, how the nuclear family is an institution of repression. But people have everyday experiences with the police that are violent, like, unquestionably so. And I would say that, like, to me, creating an anarchist space isn't about just, like, promoting, like, anarchism as, like, some kind of brand. Like, anarchy can't just be, like, another idea that people choose out of a pool of ideas. Like, anarchist analysis needs to be about people acting on their own rage and on their own desire for freedom, and developing an anarchist space is developing a space to, like, talk about that and, like, bring practical means for doing that.
I think I'm going to keep this short. I just think that the question kind of faces the world in this theoretical framework, and I'm very much like, I live in the world and, live through the this violence, and based on what, just this disdain for the society, I choose certain actions and understand, the limitations of the current power structures. And so I guess all I'm saying is, like, that being an anarchist is sort of, like, secondary. Okay, so, like, it's not... but it, can carry this power if we can have space to be self-determined.
Role
of anarchist identity and these struggles. Is it important to claim an anarchist identity?
Okay, well, it's like a concluding comment, right?
I mean, you've got 2 minutes. Yeah.
It's going to be much shorter than that. I mean, I just want to say I really enjoyed today's panel. I was completely wrong at the beginning, saying there was not enough time, because it seems there was obviously more than enough time for us to at least listen of all these really inspiring and important struggles that are happening here. And it's really great to hear that we're all taking on the global police together. And I think we can do it, and we should do it. The time is now, and let's fight.
Yeah. Continuing from what Adonis just said, I think that exactly like the corps are collaborating, and American corps are training Greek corps. Greek corps now went recently to Eastern Europe to train some other corps and so on. Historically, we have invented internationalism, or however you want to call that. Exactly like they coordinate, they organize, they use the same models against us, exactly the same way we should exchange know-how, exchange discourses and practices and tactics, and fight all together our own states and the state within our own states or outside our own states, the corps and all the violent apparatus which is functioning so effective and so well organized, but actually remember, it's just a glass, it's nothing else, it's just a screen, it's just a representation of what actually they can do. They don't have so much power as they are trying to portray themselves for having. And I guess that just go on with that and let's just smash them, because they're just a glass on the front of it.
Hey, thanks everyone for coming. I'm going to make one last real quick point, which is just that if you ever listen to the way police talk about the way they interact with other police forces, they call it mutual aid. So when police ask for another police force to intervene to help them out and to put down a riot, it's called mutual aid. And I just want to leave that at that. That's obviously, we know what real mutual aid looks like here. And yeah, so thanks for everyone for coming today. And again, Adonis and Demetrius will be at the Bastard Conference tomorrow, 11:30, talking about Greece in general. Thank you.